Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, this is a very important one because this is part of our digital marketing series.
Hey, this is going to be a lot of fun. I have been looking forward to this for some time. And before we really dive into this particular segment with this guest, I got to ask our host, we've got this upcoming event that we're doing pretty soon. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Thomas Harpointner?
Well, good morning. I can actually tell you about this event. 3/22, next Wednesday, it's the Hump Day Mixer in Buckhead at Red Martini. This time we're donating the profits to Alzheimer's Association. So it's a great place for professionals to mix and mingle and contribute to a good cause. We've got a live DJ. We've got a photo booth by the fabulous Dylan York. A lot of people follow him, right? We're expecting hundreds of people again. So it'd be really fun. And of course, Business Radio X is going to be there. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. We're going to send some of our best and brightest. They might be a few years younger than Lee and I, but we're going to be there. But we're going to have some real talent capturing some candid interviews while we're there, I think.
I think so. It's going to be fun. Yeah, a lot of people are going to be surprised. I haven't leaked this part yet. Yeah, we're going to put that out tomorrow. Yeah.
Well, this is our digital marketing series that AIS Media helps us with. Can you tell us what we're going to talk about today?
Yeah, today is actually going to be a really exciting topic because, you know, often we talk about social media, we talk about search marketing, we talk about website design, the do's and don'ts. But, you know, today we're going to address a question that we get a lot of at AIS Media from a lot of our clients, particularly this time of year, and that's around maximizing the return on investment on pay-per-click advertising. Pay-per-click is, of course, very common on Google, right? You set a budget. You select your keywords, and Google then goes ahead and charges your credit card, right? So it's a very quick and effective way of driving traffic to your website. It's also a very quick way to burn a lot of money if you don't know what you're doing. So we get a lot of questions that we answer for our clients routinely. So we thought we'd put some of these bullet points together, to maximize conversion rates and, of course, return on investment.
Now, I have a question about pay-per-click. It always puzzled me because you have an ad that's on the side, and then everybody in their head goes, nobody clicks on those ads.
That's right.
Isn't that kind of the thought?
That is the thought.
But people do click on those ads.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And is it better to have an ad that no one clicks on, like a really bad ad that no one clicks on, just so that your name is in front of the people lots of times, as opposed to one that's super good that everybody clicks on?
That's a good question. Yeah. It's kind of a catch-22. I mean, the reason you're running a pay-per-click campaign is to get clicks that convert into visitors, that convert into leads. If you're running ads that no one clicks on, you're probably bidding on keywords that no one searches for. And if you're doing that, then
it's a waste.
They're probably wasting a lot more time.
But if your keywords are correct, but your ad's terrible, but they see your name over and over, but never click on it. Is there value in that?
Well, Google kind of has an algorithm, that works
against
that. It'll
push you down. Yeah. it won't let you kind of
No one's clicking, it means the ad's not very, very relevant to the search, and it's probably not going to happen.
They boot you out of there.
Yeah.
So what are some strategies that work in pay-per-click?
Well, but you brought up a very good one. There is value in brand awareness, right? So a lot of brands, they will bid on their own brand, like Target. If you search Target on Google, often they'll bid on Target and it'll be a paid ad.
So they're paying to go to their own website.
Right. They're paying that tollmaster. A quick factoid. Okay. Google's doing a lot of things these days, right? From driverless cars to phones and all this stuff. But still 95% of Google's revenue comes from pay-per-click advertising. So if you think about that, Google makes a lot of money. So to answer that earlier question, do people click these ads? You bet they do. But what's really interesting is that today, with so many people using mobile phones and tablets and all types of different devices, it's hard to know what's paid and what's free anymore. Mm-hmm. So many people click paid ads without really realizing that these are paid ads that they're clicking on.
Right.
So yes, those ads do get a lot of clicks. So when you start a pay-per-click campaign, you know, the key is, of course, to pick the right type of keywords. And Google will tell you how much it costs to get clicks on a particular keyword, whether it's a dollar or, believe it or not, some of these keywords are up to $100.
Right, hundreds of dollars.
Yeah. It can get very, very pricey. But yeah, for most businesses, they can get high quality traffic to their website for maybe, you know, $3 to $10 to $12 per click, many of the clients' campaigns that we manage. So, you know, every keyword does have a cost. And, you know, don't necessarily bid on the least expensive keywords because they generally also get the least amount of traffic.
Now, is keyword really the right descriptor? Because isn't mm-hmm. it sometimes a key phrase mm-hmm. or a set of words? It's not just one word you're looking for, or are you looking for one word?
Sometimes it's a single word, and you're right. Sometimes it is a phrase. It might be cleaning service or Italian restaurants, right? You know, best real estate attorney. These are phrases and keywords that people search for. And today people are actually searching on search engines also using voice, right? They're using services like Alexa and Siri to say, hey, best Italian restaurant in Sandy Springs. And, you know, these services will actually return results. So when we're optimizing for search, it's not just for, you know, the visual text. It's also, you know, audio, right?
Wow.
Voice text. And some of these results are paid and some of them are free. So focusing on keywords, the key is to focus on the words that don't just drive traffic to the website, but drive conversion. So what I mean by that, a really good example, let's say you're selling, student loans. Well, there are a lot of people have a lot of questions around student loans. They're not necessarily looking for a student loan, but these could be graduate students writing term papers and so forth. So, you know, you've got to figure out the type of keywords that drive the traffic that get the highest conversion rates. And depending on your business, a conversion could be a sign up. Maybe you're trying to get people to download an app. It could be a sale. In the case of some of our e-commerce clients, they're selling stuff on their site. And for other businesses, they're looking for a lead. They're looking for somebody to fill out a form, request information, or pick up the phone and actually make a call to set up an appointment, maybe if you're a dentist, for instance.
So whatever the conversion is, you want to think about what is the phrase or word that the person's searching for right before they're going to do that.
Yeah, the highest intent keywords. What type of traffic on the website actually converts into an action? So the way to figure that out, you've got to analyze, your Google Analytics. You've got to figure out where the traffic's coming from, what they're doing once they hit your website, and what type of traffic actually converts into new business. And that's where, you know, some professional help could come in really handy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, another point is, of course, don't just drive traffic to your homepage. And it's very, Google makes it super easy to set up a pay-per-click campaign. If you've ever done it, it's as simple almost as a three-step process. You know, pick your keywords, type in your credit card number, and what's the URL that you want to send traffic to. But for heaven's sake, don't just send them to the homepage if you're selling a bunch of stuff. You know, so for instance, if you're selling a very specific business service or a product, you want to send them to the section of the website with that product specifically. An e-commerce site, if you're selling a specific ski jacket that people are searching for, send them to the web page within the site that actually sells that jacket, not just to the homepage. We see a lot of pay-per-click campaigns waste a lot of money simply by sending traffic to the homepage.
And then expecting the person to then navigate to that page.
And would you do that?
No.
You get one
shot at it, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, people aren't very patient today, right?
Right, it's one shot.
Yeah, and you know, we're also dealing with about 70% of internet traffic today is mobile, right, from mobile phones. And those folks, they've got half the patience. Right?
Right. They're on the move.
They're not very patient and they've also have half the bandwidth. So clicking back and forth, sometimes on the go, is just very tedious. So you've got to get people directly to where they want to go. Make it easy for them. Use unique landing pages. You may have to set up a landing page specifically for your pay-per-click campaign to maximize your return on investment.
Now, also, should you use a separate landing page kind of website or should you use a landing page within your existing website?
Well, you know, that depends. There are some use cases where it may make sense to set up a landing page outside of your main domain, mainly for testing purposes. You know, platforms we use sometimes like Unbounce, they'll let you create a landing page on the fly, just point and click to kind of figure out if you're doing an A-B split test, if you're testing different messages. But ultimately, it makes sense to drive traffic to a landing page that ultimately lives on your website. Mm-hmm. So when people bounce off that landing page and they start clicking around the rest of your website, your site gets traffic.
Right, yeah. For more traffic.
Yeah, exactly. You know, phone numbers. You know, if you're in a type of business where you want people to call you for to set an appointment or have questions, Google gives you the technology to use unique phone numbers that actually can reside right within the pay-per-click ad. So often people will search and call directly from the ad. They may not even have to go to the website, but you certainly want to know what's working and what's not. So if you're using your main, you know, front desk phone number along with all the other ads you're running, then you won't know which ad is
what's working and what's not.
So it really all comes down to tracking, right? Mm-hmm. Landing pages, using unique phone numbers, even unique URLs that can be tracked. If you are sending people to a landing page and you're running different ads, different campaigns, also use a unique URL. You don't necessarily have to set up a unique landing page for every ad, but set up a unique URL. And also within Google, Google allows you, has a system that allows you to do that, and it tracks that traffic right back within Google Analytics. So if you're running five different ad campaigns and you're testing five different messages, you'll be able to see where's the traffic coming from, which traffic actually converts into leads and which actually turns into business. So over time, you can optimize the performance of a pay-per-click campaign. And we have sometimes been able to reduce the pay-per-click budget for clients 50, 60, even 70%. While maintaining the same amount of traffic and conversion rates. So a conversion rate optimization, as it's often called in the business, really does pay off.
Now, when you're coming up with the ad, how important, like, do you test different headlines? Like, what are some of the things you test?
Yeah, you test everything, you know. Headlines, absolutely. You know, in the old days when we ran, you know, ads in newspaper, remember those newspaper ads, the classifieds, right?
But in a Google ad, though, isn't it just like a... You only have a few characters, right?
There's a limit. Yeah, yeah. And just, again, just like in a newspaper classified, every character counts. So right. You definitely want to become good at writing catchy headlines that are to the point, specific keywords, you know, specific
Who on your
words.
Team's the best headline guy?
Wow. You know, I think that depends on industry. We've got Sam in the office here, you know, this morning in the studio, and he's gotten really, really good at writing these pay-per-click ads.
Really? What's his personal best?
I don't know. Sam?
he has no comment.
You know, he doesn't want to give away his secrets. But I mean, we'll let him chime in for a minute. How important are those pay-per-click headline ads, ads and pay-per-click ads?
Headline's the place to go. I mean, there's a little bit of description there. There's an option, but people clicking real quick. They might see two words and click from there. So you don't have a lot of time. You got to get them with those two words.
And it's not just you don't want a random person clicking. You want a person that's about to do something, take an action for your client. So that's the magic. How quickly do you have to go through headlines to know if you're onto something good?
Now, what are we usually, how long do we run the A-B split test, would you say? What's fair?
30 days, 30, 60 days even.
In 30 days, you test two things or you test like 20?
We got to test ad copy, landing page copy. There's multiple things that you want to take a look at.
That are all being tested within that 30 days to kind of hone in on something that mm-hmm. is working.
Yeah, and sometimes you can see if you're heading in the right direction in terms of an ad, even much sooner. It depends how popular the ad is, how popular the keywords are. You know, if you're advertising something very, very popular, you may get hundreds and hundreds of people clicking, you know, within a couple of days. So you can do an A-B split test and test again and again and again, you know, within, you know, every 3 to 5 days, every couple
of weeks.
But
sometimes you have something where you're like, oh, this is a good one, and you put it out there and it like bombs. Then sometimes you just have like that's safety, yeah. And then that one's the one that kills.
That's the control.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then that's the control, so that's what everything's got to beat from that point forward.
That's right. Yeah.
Man, you do need a professional to do this. Sounds like a lot of work.
Well, yeah, you know, how much time do you have, right? So if you're running a dental practice, do you want to be with your patients or do you want to, you know,
I mean, it's fun to do headlines. Yes, different strokes, right? So when you're working with the client and you get them through, you got the headline that works, you have the ad that's driving traffic. So how does it progress? Like you're just constantly tweaking it?
No, so you're tweaking the ad, you know, not just for, you don't want to just tweak the ad, of course, again, for the most clicks. You want to tweak the ad for the right type of clicks.
Right.
And then once people click, want to see what happens when they get to that landing page, presuming you have a landing page. Google Analytics ought to be installed to see if people are actually staying on the page. Are they reading the page or do they immediately bounce off? You know, I mean, imagine if you owned a retail store and, you know, 500 people walked into the store and 90% of them immediately turned around and walked out. You'd be alarmed, right?
To see
90% of your customers doing a 180. You know, the web is a little bit more mysterious because you can't actually see these live people necessarily unless you're using the right type of technology. So we also use a technology called a heat map, which is an invisible system that sits on top of a landing page or a website and shows you almost in real time, you know, how people are interacting with your website. You know, and it is a heat map. It shows you hot spots and cold spots on the page. You'll know those. You'll notice that most of the time people focus on the top left-hand corner first because we read from left to right and from top to bottom. So usually the top left-hand side, the middle of the page is a hot spot. The bottom, if you want to bury something, you bury
bottom
it at
right.
the bottom right. Yeah, that's the graveyard. So, you know, make people scroll way, 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 way down and to the right. You know, that's where you put your copyrights and so forth. But the heat maps combined with Google Analytics are extremely valuable along with A-B split testing with landing pages. And, it's, you know, if it sounds like a tedious process, that's because it can be. But once you know what's working and you've optimized the conversion rates, it will pay off big time because these ads can run 24/7 on autopilot.
Right. And that's the objective, is to kind of figure that out as quickly as possible to get it working for your client.
Right.
Now, so once they get to the page, you got the heat map, you see where the good things are, where the bad things are. Are there things on the page that helps kind of conversion? Is there anything you can be doing on the page that kind of helps your chances?
Yeah, you know, people are very visual, right? I mean, look at the rise of Instagram and Facebook. Even Facebook has made their pictures bigger. People love visuals. They love imagery. So, you know, if you're selling a product, show off a lot of pictures. You know, put people, you know, real live people, you know, real customers, you know, real product shots into your landing page. Make the copy very crisp and clear. And try to use bullets. No one likes to read big, long, drawn out paragraphs, right? It's not a term paper. So, keep it interesting. Use big fonts, little fonts, bullets, images. Keep the page interesting and moving. And make it easy for people to buy. You know, give them a nice big buy button, or make the phone number, if you want them to call a phone number, very visible. Let them know very clearly what you want them to do. We call those calls to action.
Mm-hmm.
So don't make them guess. You know, am I supposed to, you know, read more, or am I supposed to download something?
And how many calls to action should you have on a page? Should it be just one thing?
It depends on what you want them to do. You know, let's say if you're trying to drive traffic to an office, there may be a couple of ways in which you want to get leads. You know, they may want to fill out a form and request information in writing, or if they have an urgent need, give them a phone number to call. You know, for some of our clients, we've even recommended, chat technology, you know, where, you know, if you want to speak to a live representative or chat with somebody, a live agent, make that available. And, for some businesses, that's extremely effective because mm-hmm. people may not be ready to buy, but they have a lot of questions. They're also impatient. So they may not want to wait for somebody to reply to their email in a day or two. So having a chat agent standing by is great, but of course that has to make sense for your business because, you know, if you have a chat box there where no one answers,
you've done is made them angry.
You'll frustrate people. That's right. Yeah.
And then, so you got them on the page. Now they're either giving you their email, you're trying to capture something, mm-hmm. right? Some call to action. So what are there tips to get an email or build the database?
Absolutely. For many businesses who want to generate leads, many B2Bs, you have complex sales, the lead is the conversion, right? If you're selling, let's say, a phone system, you know, to businesses, they're probably not going to buy the whole system on the spot. So you're generating leads. And often a really good way to get a lead is to offer something for free, a free white paper, a free presentation, maybe a tutorial. Give them something that they can receive via email, something that they can respond to. to prompt that user to fill out that form. Because once they've completed that form and you have their name and their email address in your database, now you have a means of following up with them.
And in order to figure out a budget for all of this stuff, how do you calculate like how much I should spend every month for this? Is this the main thing you should be doing, or is this just part of a larger marketing plan?
Well, it's going to be, in most cases, it's going to be a portion of your marketing plan, right? You've got that metaphorical pie, right? That pie chart, you know, what percentage of my marketing budget should be allocated to pay-per-click? How much should be allocated to search engine optimization? You know, it turns out that about, you know, 40, and it depends on industry to industry, but usually 40 to 60% of people will click on paid ads, or 40 to 60 will click on organic ads, depending on the business you're in. So you ought to be splitting it, you know, equally. You know, reserve some budget for, of course, email marketing, because you want to follow up with your folks in your email database. And couple that with traditional advertising. If you're sending out, you know, circulars or postcards in the mail, the landing pages come in very handy, you know, to get...
Now you have a place to send them.
Yeah, send them to your landing page, you know, once you've tested it. Now, we'll say, you know, running billboard ads, doing direct mail or TV advertising can be very, very pricey. But you know what? The people that are listening or watching are the same people that are surfing online these days. Just about everybody uses the internet. So testing a message, testing headlines online is generally a lot more quick and less costly than saying, hey, you know, let's send out 20,000 pieces of mail and then try it again in 2 weeks.
Right, and hope that we got the headline right.
That's right.
Now, when you're working with your clients to figure out how much money, like how do you decide whether to be in like Google or LinkedIn or Facebook, like what place to put these ads in?
Well, so that's a really good point. You know, when, you know, Facebook marketing and advertising does work, but the big difference between Facebook and social media and Google, you know, think of Facebook as a cocktail party. You know, people, you know, they go there and they might make some business contacts, right? But they're going there for more fun, right? It's more social, it's more for entertainment, and they may stumble across something.
LinkedIn versus Google.
LinkedIn's a little more buttoned up. A lot of today, most LinkedIn users are looking for jobs, or they're looking for employees still. A lot of stuff is happening at LinkedIn. You know, they were recently acquired by Microsoft, so we'll see what Microsoft does with them. Surely they also want businesses to generate legitimate business leads. But you know, when people go to a search engine like Google, it's a free-for-all, right? They can do anything. They can search for anything they want on Google. But there's nothing distracting there, like, you know, family pictures and what your, you know, right, what your neighbor's dog is up to. No cat videos, you know, unless you search for them. So when people go to Google, they're looking for something very specific. So the intent on Google is much higher than the intent on Facebook.
Now, the intent being higher, can you target as well on Google as you can on LinkedIn?
In some ways, you can target even better on Google. What you can't do on Google, you know, you can't target certain demographics. You can't say, you know, give me, you know, women and between 25 and 35, you know, who own cats. You have to create an ad and basically wait for those cat lovers to find you. If you know, if you're on LinkedIn, you know, LinkedIn doesn't break it down into cat lovers and non-cat lovers, but you can say 25 to 35.
I want
female.
Everybody that's in Microsoft.
Yeah. Exactly.
Can you do that in Google?
No. So in Google, you write the ad, and you wait for the Microsoft folks to find you, right? On LinkedIn, if you want to hit Microsoft employees, you know, certain company employees or people in certain demographics, you basically build that list. So LinkedIn is kind of like you know, old school direct mail, where you go to a list broker, you build the list, then you write the ad, then you mail it out. Versus Google, you create the ad and you wait for them to come to you.
Is Google less expensive than LinkedIn?
It really does depend. I mean, you know, when we look at expense, we're mainly focused on return on investment, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you invest a dollar and you make $10 in return, that's our goal, right? It doesn't matter. I mean, you'll come to me with a box of $10 bills, right?
Sure.
But if you could run cheaper ads on LinkedIn, but if those ads aren't getting clicks and they're not making you any money, you know, not driving business growth, what good are they?
Right.
You know.
So now, does that cover our pay-per-click? You good?
I think those are the key tips for pay-per-click advertising. And
on AIS Media, do you have any kind of information about that?
Yeah, I would invite listeners to come to AISmedia.com. We've got a blog section with tons of valuable content. Sam here actually, you know, wrote an article recently that was published in American Express Business Open Forum on the topic of search marketing. So we have that published on our website. Really, really good article to read up on. And of course, you can also connect with us on Facebook if you have questions. You know, message us on Facebook. We're happy to answer questions related to any digital marketing topic.
Now, who'd you bring with you today?
Well, we have a very special guest here today, and actually one of our clients, and it's Rachel, and I'm going to let her introduce herself, and we're going to talk about her business a little bit, because it's a very interesting business, and she's been really, really fun to work with.
Good morning. My name's Rachel Sullins. I'm with Made Brigade and Made Simple. I'm an Atlanta native, almost. Been here 18 years, and we are indeed working with AIS Media. And they're doing a terrific job for us.
So now, what is your business? How do you serve the public?
So Made Brigade, Made Simple, we're a cleaning franchise. We have franchises across the U.S., Canada, and we also have some abroad.
Are you the franchisor or a franchisee?
I work with the corporate office. So I'm the VP of operations for Made Simple.
And then how is Made Simple different than Made Brigade?
Made Simple is the little sister. So Made Brigade started over 30 years ago here in Atlanta, and we've been franchising since 1984. Made Simple has been open since 2012. We were targeting a different type of franchisee with Made Simple. We were trying to offer our opportunity to people that had a little less to invest, but still wanted the background and the support of a company like Made Brigade that has the experience. So Made Simple, our franchisees start off as owner-operators, and then they develop as they bring on new hires and they get maids and teams to join them. Whereas with Made Brigade, the overhead's a lot higher. You have to have an office, a fleet of cars, uniforms. So Made Simple is also different because of the target market. Think of Made Brigade as the Rolls-Royce of cleaning services. When we're cleaning, we're there on our hands and knees using toothbrushes, you know, extremely detailed work. With Made Simple, we're servicing people that want cleaning off of their to-do list, but they're looking for maybe a little less detail.
It's like tidying up.
It's definitely still a very good cleaning, thank you very much. It's just the difference between buying a Rolls Royce and maybe a...
Lexus?
A Lexus, yes. That would be a good comparison.
And so is part of your role to get more customers for the franchisees, or is it to attract more franchisees?
Well, with our franchise, all of us wear a lot of hats. So as well as overseeing the operations and support for Made Simple, I also work with the franchise development team in acquiring new franchisees. And that's really where AIS has come in to help us. Mm-hmm. As Thomas said, the internet it's a space, it's crowded, it's competitive. If you don't have the right help, it's so easy to get lost. So for example, the keywords, well, that's great. So you might think, well, we can just do this in-house. Keywords for maid service.
Is that something you guys thought?
We tried it. Can you see the smile on my face? We tried it.
It sounded like you had some scar tissue.
Not scar tissue. I call it badges of honor passed. No, so when you're doing it in-house, you think of the obvious.
So what were some of your obvious choices?
So I'm going there.
All right.
So for example, cleaning franchise, maid service. The problem with that is it's too competitive. So you may be paying, at some point, we were paying close to $60 per click.
Wow.
And so you can go through a budget very quickly. And I'm talking about my experience with Made Brigade as well as Made Simple.
Sure.
So we're wondering, well, where's the budget going? Why is it that we're only appearing 10 times a day and we're still, you know, throwing hundreds of dollars at this per day? So then when we started to research, well, how can we be doing this better with the same budget, mm-hmm. We looked at working with companies that might be able to help. And when we found AIS Media, I will admit, we shopped around. We talked to numerous companies, both local and also out of state. But what we liked about AIS was their approach. They have a very deep bench. We have people like Sam that write incredible phrases and keywords for us. We have Denise, we have Thomas. To be able to recreate what we get from AIS Media would require us to hire at least 20 people right. in-house that are all mm-hmm. subject matter experts. I mean, it's not financially feasible. We may as well become an SEO company at that point, right? I was going to say, so what AIS does with a company like us, they work with us to determine what's our goal. And then they help us to look at the environment that we're working within in terms of who are your competitors? What are the keywords that people who are looking to buy your franchise actually using versus what you think they're using?
So how do you figure that out?
By working with them, we do A/B tests. We did that over a month. And but what's great is that they can
tweak things. Do you talk to your customer, like the people who just recently bought franchises? Do you talk to them and say, how did you find us?
The internet. I will say 99% of the time, it's the internet. Days gone by, we used to use more brokers. Mm-hmm. But honestly, there's a financial difference in using brokers and paying commission versus using a company like AAS to help
us. To invest on that end.
Exactly.
It's probably cheaper than the broker.
Exactly. And things like heat maps. It's terrific. And this is something I really love too. When we do weekly meetings with AAS, they truly spend their time with us going through reports, showing us things in graphical detail. The heat maps, just yesterday, in fact, we had a call and they showed us, well, these are the forms you want people to fill out, but here are the pages that people are actually going to. So in that case, optimize the pages where people are going to and have a call to action there. How would we know that if we didn't have the technology from AIS supporting us?
And then you make those changes based on their recommendations.
We do. We make those changes based on the recommendations. So in fact, what we've seen is an equivalent lead flow to the site, but a higher, as they would call, conversion rate.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're now giving people what they want in a manner in which they're ready to receive the information. And that's very important. You can't create something that no one wants.
Now, when you started working with them, it sounds like, you know, you said you were shopping around. So, you know, you decide on them and then you're going boldly forward. It's kind of a leap of faith, right? Because you had been doing it yourselves. You were frustrated. You said, let's go and get some experts in here. We land on these guys. Now you're on. You're doing the work now. They're doing some work. What was the first thing that surprised you where you're like, wow, these guys might be onto something here. This is better than what we were doing.
To be completely transparent with you, this isn't the first time we've worked with an SEO provider. In the many years that I've been with the company, we've worked with quite a few. So this wasn't our first time doing the discovery phase, etc. But obviously, there was a reason why we chose to move to AIS. And part of that was meeting the team and seeing their technologies and how they applied them. And also speaking to references. We love that they're a local Atlanta company too.
Right. So I understand that you've been down this road before. But what was something that they did where you're like, hey, these guys are better than what we've had before. They're doing something differently than I've experienced.
The content optimization. If I was to say something primary that they did that was different, it was the ability for them to really sit down, study the content on our website and tell us how to perhaps reword, rephrase, so that we were more relevant on the search engines.
And then you have results that you're happy with.
Yes. Like I said, we actually have had increased traffic, but what's more important to us is an increase in qualified candidates.
Right.
It doesn't, honestly, we'd rather deal with fewer candidates.
Right, exactly. You want
and higher quality, exactly.
Right, you want every click to be the winner, right? You don't want to now get all these clicks and then 80% of them aren't the right fit for you.
Right, way back when even the SEO industry was a lot of smoke and mirrors, there were people that would claim,
as opposed to now.
You're a devil, aren't you? So back then, though, everybody wanted to claim, and the only thing they cared about was, let's get you on the first page.
Right.
And they would use all these techniques that now are completely banned by the search engines, right? You know, oh, okay, have your have five websites and have them all redirect and do this, and then put a bunch of copy on your homepage in white. Yeah, right. white on white. Yeah, let's do this. But AIS, I think one of the reasons they do things so well is because they take the time to go to conferences and keep up on the latest technologies and changes. I mean, Google is infamous for changing how it wants to list. And
it's job security. They're in cahoots with all the SEO folks.
They may well be, and they're probably listening. I doubt it. But they change their algorithms on a fairly regular basis.
Right, because they want the person to find what they're looking for. That's their objective, right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
You don't believe that?
Right.
You don't believe Google's trying to help you find what you're looking for?
I love my Google phone. I don't want it to explode.
I see you're a little skeptical about that.
No, I'm sure that they want to make it a more user-friendly product in the end run, but it does cause more headaches for those of us that don't have help. I mean, how would you stay on top of that?
Right, it's work. It's a full-time job.
Google
doesn't necessarily send out a postcard, you know, to all of their businesses
know.
And say, hey, you know, we've got this update coming up,
we've made this
guys.
Change. Yeah. Now right. Mobile's more important.
Right.
FYI.
Oh, when talking about mobile, so another thing AIS did for us was they looked at our site on mobile and they said, okay, so do you realize that if somebody wants to contact you on your mobile site, they've got to jump through about five different hoops. Let me tell you now, they won't. And it wasn't apparent to us. I mean, you'd think, well, duh, don't you check your mobile site? Well, yeah. Duh, no, we don't. Because I look at my site every day on the computer. Why would I go home and check it on
my phone? Right.
But it made complete sense. And considering that I think 76% of our traffic comes from mobile.
Wow.
It's kind of important.
It was kind of important. Yes, yeah. It was absolutely essential. So we've been extremely pleased with the fact that they, and I'm talking on a weekly basis, a lot of other companies, they'll sit down and you have a honeymoon phase. That first month, they are all over you. Oh, you need to do this and that, and we'll have copywriters. And then after that, you're pretty much stuck
in an
automated system,
right.
Fending for yourself. Whereas with AIS, I really feel as though we get individualized attention on every call, and there truly are humans assessing the results and offering
advice.
Well,
it's on the phone. You're not sure it's humans. They have very advanced technology.
It's the new Robots. Google voice. In fact, you're not even sitting next to Thomas. It's a hologram from Google.
That's a great idea. Don't let that go.
Oh my gosh, if we could clone ourselves, we could get so much done.
So now, what were some of the kind of things that didn't work out that you learned over the way?
Things that didn't work out.
That maybe you thought, you know, look, this seems like a good idea and you tested. That's part of this process, right? It's kind of a living, breathing thing. It's not set it and forget it.
From a digital standpoint, let's see.
Or maybe what's something you were doing 5 years ago that you're not doing anymore? Well, you mentioned like brokers. You're using brokers less?
We're using brokers less. That's right. Just because we find that our audience is skipping that part of the process.
What about those shows, the franchise shows? Are people still going to those things?
People don't go to franchise shows as often as they used to. I mean, look, let's be honest. If you are out looking for a house, where are you going to go?
I will go to the neighborhood I'm interested in going to.
Okay. And then when you're interested in a home, there's likely to be a website. So you'll probably go online.
Right.
I mean, the fact that we have real estate agents, they're still necessary, of course. They're still a part of the process. But the reality is that whether you're looking for a franchise or a home, you're likely to go online and do your research first. And only then, when you're closer to commitment, will you pick up the phone and want to speak to a person.
Right. Now, but in your case, if somebody, your potential franchisee, are they looking for any type of franchise? Like, is the person that's going to pick the cleaning franchise, are they also looking at, you know, oil change and pet sitting? Like, how do they make that buying decision?
So there's definitely a funnel. And that's a question that we ask our franchisees when they decide to come to a discovery day, because by that point, they're qualified. They right. want to, they know they want to move forward with this business. And oftentimes, especially people that have left corporate America, they may not know what they want.
Right.
All they think about is,
it's a blank slate, right?
I want a business. Correct. So that makes it even more competitive. So that's why when we look at how we're going to attract people, we think, okay, for a franchise prospect that is interested in a cleaning franchise, what keywords and phrases are applicable to them? For somebody interested in a franchise business but isn't sure, what keywords are applicable to those?
So they're on a different point on the customer journey.
Correct.
Right?
Correct. So for those that aren't sure that they want a maid service business, for example, we're using phrases such as low overhead, high ROI, for example.
But are you using the word franchise?
And we'll incorporate the word franchise in there, but sometimes we don't, because not everybody knows what franchising is. When people think of franchises, oftentimes they only think about McDonald's.
Right.
And Subway. They don't realize that so...
A lot of the businesses they use every day are franchises.
Gosh, I'm going to say that most small businesses that are thriving are in fact franchises. It's extremely difficult to open your own small business today with no prior experience and actually survive. When you look at the closure rate of those that have attempted it, it's pretty sad.
The ones that just do it on their
own? The ones that try by themselves, because people don't realize the complexities
right.
of having your own business, much like people don't realize the complexities of SEO.
Right. So the person that's, is your target the person that's just that, let's call them the executive that's on the second act of their career, maybe, that maybe they got downsized or they retired and now they're, you know, they're still, they want something to do. They still want to do something in business. Is that your typical franchisee?
One of the beauties of our type of franchise is that we attract so many different people.
Right. So it's not just that one.
Correct. We have people that, yes, have received a golden parachute and decide, I want a business that has a lower overhead than, let's say, a food franchise. Food franchises, you're talking about a million plus.
Right.
So they want something with a lower overhead, but they still want a business like Maid Brigade that can allow them to have a sizable income.
Now, in your business, does the person who owns the business have to do the work, or is it built in that other people are going to do the actual work of the business?
It depends on which franchise they buy. With Maid Brigade, you're starting off as the owner and with teams. With Maid Simple, you start off as an owner-operator.
Uh-huh.
So as we were talking about the diversity of those right. that we can attract, we have those that are ex-corporate, we have teachers, we have people that used to work in the medical industry. So it's this type of business. What's nice about it is that we train them. We train our franchisees and we support them throughout the life of the business. So whether or not you've had business experience doesn't really matter as much as your willingness to put your heart and soul into it.
Right.
And that goes for any business.
Are you seeing parents and children?
Not as often. We have seen in Maid Brigade, and this is, it's been exciting because I will admit I've been with my company now 17 years. So during that time, I've seen people have young children that are now graduated from college
right.
and seeing the business being passed down to them in a willing manner, though. So not in a forceful manner where, okay, I've had this business X number of years, you're taking this over. In fact, none of the franchisees where it's passed from parent to child has ever done that. In fact, all of the franchisees have told their children explicitly, go to college, do what you want to do. And if you happen to be interested in the business,
right.
fine. If not, when I'm ready to retire, I'll sell. And in the cases where the child has decided to take on their business, it's because they came back and they said,
I've seen what's out there, and
I really like what's going on here. And it's heartwarming because it's a choice that they've made based on what they've seen with the business and how we support their parents and how we'll be supporting them.
And so as part of, you know, trying to attract this group of people, you must be constantly kind of tweaking the marketing because the customer, your customer kind of changes over time. It seems like they evolve a little bit and you have to constantly be identifying what's the best way to communicate to them.
Gosh, it is challenging because as I mentioned, we have both Made Brigade and Made Simple.
Right.
So we have different price points.
And those are two really different customers, right?
Exactly. But at the same time, it also allows us to be able to flourish in markets where people are looking for Cadillacs or Lexus.
That's right. And then
Cadillacs. I just downgraded whatever that first vehicle was earlier.
It was a Rolls Royce.
I forgot the British Flying Beauty. How could I?
So now, what's next for you guys?
We want to continue to grow our franchise and help support our franchisees and keep on leveraging services like AIS. Thank you.
So now, you're out there looking for franchisees probably constantly, right? That's a full-time job?
It is a full-time job, correct.
And then do you do marketing as corporate to help the franchisees get customers as well?
Oh, of course. With our franchisees, they, as much as anyone else, need an internet presence. However, what is a little different in our market, and we're seeing it change in most communities, is that customers have become very community-oriented in that they want to buy local, shop local, eat local. So for this reason, one of the focuses we have with our franchisees is community networking.
Mm-hmm.
The internet, you have to be on there. You need a presence.
Right.
But the best customers we're seeing of late are referrals from going to community events, becoming involved in networking groups. Because people want to meet you and see you and then engage the service. And they really like to know, how have you given back to the community? So we strongly encourage all of our franchisees to become involved in charity work.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's working with the Animal Humane Society or the American Heart Association, for
example. But you just leave that to the franchisee's discretion, right? They pick the charity, the local charity that's important to them?
We absolutely believe that they should choose a charity that they believe in because they will support it authentically.
Right.
However, we do provide support in terms of having a networking coach so that if they're going to an event, they're comfortable, they've got the marketing pieces they need. They've got an idea of what they'll say to people that come up to the table to speak with them. So we support them, but we allow them to choose the charities that they best want to support.
And this networking coach, that's somebody in corporate that works with the franchisees individually?
That's right. Every location has a slightly different need.
Mm-hmm.
Every location might even have a slightly different marketing slant that they need to use. So it's important for us to be sure to treat our franchisees as individuals and not just have one boilerplate response for everything in marketing or operations.
And it's interesting that you separate networking from marketing. So there's help for local marketing and there's also this boots on the ground networking.
Right. So I look at it in terms of having community networking,
mm-hmm,
and then marketing, which is a broader term, meaning internet presence, national pieces that are created
right,
for them.
That's more macro, and this is
correct.
More
this
micro.
Is micro, right?
And then, so you're giving them the skills to go out into the community because some people aren't comfortable in that, and you give them the skills to be more comfortable in that environment.
You can't give people certain skills, so we have to vet them. When they come to Discovery Day, we're looking for a certain personality type.
Okay, so that's part of your vetting, is you want that people person that wants to engage with the community.
Exactly, and it doesn't mean that everybody has to be gregarious. It means that they need to, in their own way, be comfortable communicating with people directly. Mm-hmm. Whether it's in a group setting or one-on-one going to a customer's home for an in-home estimate.
Right. So what other ways are you working with her, Thomas?
Well, Sam is Sam. As we were discussing, we speak almost weekly, you know, and that makes it extremely valuable to figure out, you know, specifically how we can provide the most assistance.
You work with other franchises, right?
We do, and we work with many types of businesses. And one of the greatest value I think that our clients get is that we can cross-pollinate certain ideas. Because as digital marketing evolves and as it changes, I mean, think about it. You know, 13 years ago, there was no Facebook, right? We started in 1997, which was exactly 1 year before Google even existed, right? So email marketing wasn't really a real thing until 2003, until it was, you know, there was, you know, some regulation around the Can't Spam Act. So digital marketing is evolving constantly. Now there's a big, obviously, a shift that has been moving towards mobile. As we heard today, over 70% of traffic for most companies comes from mobile, some type of mobile device first. So what we're going to see in the next couple of years is going to be very exciting. So looking forward in terms of, what's on the cutting edge is where we sit on a daily basis, bringing those ideas and you know working with our team, like, you know, guys like Sam, you know, who literally work on us front lines with Google search engines and clients every day, really helps us guide our own company in terms of where we need to be, where we can make the greatest impact for our clients and help their business grow.
Now, Rachel, for you, do you have any tips for the people out there that are about to choose an SEO company to work with or a digital marketing company to work with? What are some do's and don'ts?
When looking for a company to help you with internet marketing, I would say make sure that they've got a good strategist on hand, someone with the experience and depth of knowledge that can come look at your company and see where improvements can be made using humans rather than just mm-hmm. tools. You want someone that's been in the business for a long time. Check references. People are typically pretty honest nowadays. I would say look at probably 3 or 5 companies before you make your decision so that, because you want it to be a long-term relationship. So do shop around and also, you want to Google them. How far are they coming up in the search engine ranking? If you type in search engine marketing and they're not even anywhere close to being on the first 5 pages.
That might be a red flag, right?
Exactly.
Are there any other red flags that you would say, look, if they do this, then that's probably not?
If they are asking you to do things that you know are specifically frowned upon, let's say, by the search engine, such as the white on white,
right,
or having a ton of redirects. That should be a red flag for you. However, not everybody knows what to look for.
Right.
So, hey, Google what to look for in a search engine marketing provider.
So it sounds like you use Google quite a bit.
Don't we all?
So now, and if who are you looking for right now? More franchisees?
Franchisees, yes. We're looking for those that are looking for a lifestyle change, because our business, it's wonderful because you can work Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, once you're established.
Right.
We're a business where you can get in for low overhead, especially if you're with Made Simple, because you don't have to have an office, fleet of cars, uniforms, etc. So check out madebrigade.com or madesimple.com for either of those franchise opportunities, and we would love to speak to anyone interested.
So the qualities you're looking for are what? You said people, at least some level of people person?
So the franchisees that are most successful are definitely people-oriented, extremely hardworking, and able to follow systems, and that's really important. If you are not somebody that wants to leverage the support and the systems that have been built up for over 30 years, don't buy a franchise. If you're really going to just do it for a logo, you're not the right fit. You know, our franchisees do well because we have the experience and the background to help them do well.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Thank you, Thomas, for putting this together.
Well, thank you, Lee.
And then the event again is March 22nd, Hump Day Mixer.
It's the Hump Day Mixer, March 22nd, which is, of course, a Wednesday.
Of course.
Right, at Red Martini and Buckhead. There's no cover.
No cover.
Need to be 21 and up. And folks at Red Martini have actually agreed to split their bar profits with us for the night. That's how we're making money for Alzheimer's. So we're donating the proceeds to Alzheimer's. And we have a photo booth. We got a live DJ. We've got a couple hundred folks come out joining us. Business Radio X is, of course, going to be there. And the theme is purplish. You know?
Purplish.
So it's a good opportunity for ladies to get a little dressy and get in a cute purplish cocktail dress.
And the men can dress up
mingle.
Like Prince.
That's right. A lot of
purple. or black if you can't swing the purple, you know. Black's acceptable always. So there's more information actually on Facebook. If you go if you search on Facebook Hump Day Mixer, we have a web page set up on Facebook, and there's also an event page on Facebook for Hump Day Mixer. For the March 22 event. So all you need to do is just RSVP and invite some friends and have a good time.
Good stuff. Well, thank you again for putting this together.
My pleasure.
This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.